Natural Man in a Dreadful Condition by Jonathan Edwards. Acts 16:29-30. Then he called for a light, and sprang in, and came trembling, and fell down before Paul and Silas, and brought them out, and said, Sirs, what must I do to be saved? We have here, and in the context, an account of the conversion of the jailer, which is one of the most remarkable instances of the kind in the Scriptures. The jailer before seems not only to have been wholly insensible to the things of religion, but to have been a persecutor, and to have persecuted these very men, Paul and Silas, though he now comes to them in so earnest a manner, asking them what he must do to be saved. We are told in the context that all the magistrates and multitude of the city rose up jointly in a tumult against them, and took them, and cast them into prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely. Whereupon he thrust them into the inner prison, and made their feet fast in the stocks. And it is probable he did not act in this merely as a servant or instrument of the magistrates, but that he joined with the rest of the people in their rage against them, and that he did what he did urged on by his own will, as well as the magistrates' commands, which made him execute their commands with such rigor. But when Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises at midnight, and there was suddenly a great earthquake, and God had in so wonderful a manner set upon the prison doors, and every man's bands were loose, he was greatly terrified, and in a kind of desperation was about to kill himself. But Paul and Silas, crying out to him, Do thyself no harm, for we are all here. Then he called for a light and sprang in, as we have the account in the text. We may observe, number one, the objects of his concern. He is anxious about his salvation. He is terrified by his guilt, especially by his guilt and his ill treatment of these ministers of Christ. He is concerned to escape from that guilty state, the miserable state he was in by reason of sin. Number two, the sense which he has of the dreadfulness of his present state. This he manifests in several ways. One, by his great haste to escape from that state, by his haste to inquire what he must do. He seems to be urged by the most pressing concern, sensible of his present necessity of deliverance without any delay. Before he was quiet and secure in his natural state, but now his eyes are open. He is in the utmost haste. If the house had been on fire over his head, he could not have asked more earnestly or as being in greater haste. He could soon have come to Paul and Silas to ask them what he must do if he had only walked. But he was in too great haste to walk only or to run, for he sprang in. He leaped into the place where they were. He fled from wrath. He fled from the fire of divine justice, and so hastened as one that fled for his life. Number two, by his behavior and gesture before Paul and Silas, he fell down. That he fell down before those whom he had persecuted and thrust into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks shows what was the state of his mind. It shows some great distress that makes such an alteration in him that brings him to this. He was broken down, as it were, by the distress of his mind and a sense of the dreadfulness of his condition. Number three, his earnest manner of inquiring of them what he shall do to escape from this miserable condition. Sirs, what must I do to be saved? So distressed that he is brought to be willing to do anything, to have salvation on any terms and by any means, however difficult, brought, as it were, to write a blank and give it in to God, that God may prescribe his own terms. Doctrine. They who are in a natural condition are in a dreadful condition. This I shall endeavor to make appear by a particular consideration of the state and condition of unregenerate persons. One, as to their actual condition in this world. Two, as to their relations to the future world. 1. The condition of those who are in a natural state is dreadful in the present world. First, on account of the depraved state of their natures. As men come into the world, their natures are dreadfully depraved. Man in his primitive state was a noble piece of divine workmanship, but by the fall it is dreadfully defaced. It is awful to think that so excellent a creature as man is should be so ruined. The dreadfulness of the condition which unconverted men are in this respect, appears in the following things. 1. The dreadfulness of their depravity appears in that they are so sottishly blind and ignorant. God gave man a faculty of reason and understanding, which is a noble faculty. Herein he differs from all other creatures here below. He is exalted in his nature above them, and is in this respect like the angels, and is made capable to know God and to know spiritual and eternal things. And God gave him understanding for this end, that he might know him and know heavenly things, and made him as capable to know these things as any others. But man has debased himself and has lost his glory in this respect. He has become as ignorant of the excellency of God as a very beast. His understanding is full of darkness. His mind is blind, is altogether blind to spiritual things. Men are ignorant of God and ignorant of Christ, ignorant of the way of salvation, ignorant of their own happiness, blind in the midst of the brightest and clearest light, ignorant under all manner of instructions, Romans 3:17. The way of peace they have not known. Isaiah 27:11. It is a people of no understanding. Jeremiah 4:22. My people are foolish, they have not known me. They are sottish children and have none understanding. 5:21. Hear now this, O foolish people, and without understanding. Psalm 95:10-11. It is a people that do err in their heart, and they have not known my ways, unto whom I swear in my wrath that they should not enter into my rest. 1 Corinthians 15:34. Some have not the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. There is a spirit of atheism prevailing in the hearts of men, a strange disposition to doubt of the very being of God and of another world and of everything which cannot be seen with the bodily eyes. Psalm 14:1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They do not realize that God sees them when they commit sin and will call them to an account for it. And therefore, if they can hide sin from the eyes of men, they are not concerned but are bold to commit it. Psalm 94:7-9. Yet they say, the Lord shall not see it, neither shall the God of Jacob regard it. Understand, ye brutish among the people, and ye fools, when will you be wise? He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? Psalm 73:11. They say, how doth God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? So sottishly unbelieving are they of future things, of heaven and hell, and will commonly run the venture of damnation sooner than be convinced. They are stupidly senseless to the importance of eternal things. How hard to make them believe and to give them a real conviction that to be happy to all eternity is better than all other good, and to be miserable forever under the wrath of God is worse than all other evil. Men show themselves senseless enough in temporal things, but in spiritual things far more so. Luke 12:56. Ye hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky and of the earth, but how is it that ye do not discern this time? They are very subtle in evil designs, but sottish in those things which most concern them. Jeremiah 4:22, they are wise to do evil, but to do good they have no knowledge. Wicked men show themselves more foolish and senseless of what is best for them than the very brutes. Isaiah 1:3, the ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib, but Israel doth not know. My people doth not consider. Jeremiah 8:7, yea, the stork in the heaven knoweth her appointed times, and the turtle and the crane and the swallow observe the time of their coming, but my people know not the judgment of the Lord. Number 2, they have no goodness in them. Romans 7:18, in me, that is, in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. They have no principle that disposes them to anything that is good. Natural men have no higher principle in their hearts than self-love. And herein they do not excel the devils. The devils love themselves and love their own happiness and are afraid of their own misery, and they go no further. And the devils would be as religious as the best of natural men if they were in the same circumstances. They would be as moral and would pray as earnestly to God and take as much pains for salvation if there were the like opportunity. And as there is no good principle in the hearts of natural men, so there are never any good exercises of heart, never one good thought or motion of heart in them. Particularly, there is no love to God in them. They never had the least degree of love to the infinitely glorious being. They never had the least true respect of the being that made them, and in whose hand their breath is, and from whom are all their mercies. However they may seem to do things at times out of respect to God, and wear a face as though they honored Him and highly esteemed Him, it is all mere hypocrisy. Though there may be a fair outside, they are like painted sepulchres. Within, there is nothing but putrefaction and rottenness. They have no love to Christ, the glorious Son of God, who is so worthy of their love and has shown such wonderful grace to sinners in dying for them. They never did anything out of any real respect to the Redeemer of the world since they were born. They never brought forth any fruit to that God who made them and in whom they live and move and have their being. They never have in any way answered the end for which they were made. They have hitherto lived altogether in vain and to no purpose. They never so much as sincerely obeyed one command of God, never so much as moved one finger out of a true spirit of obedience to Him who made them to serve Him. And when they have seemed outwardly to comply with God's commands, their hearts were not in it. They did not do it out of any spirit of subjection to God or any disposition to obey Him, but were merely driven to it by fear, or in some way influenced by their worldly interest. They never gave God the honor of one of His attributes. They never gave Him the honor of His authority by obeying Him. They never gave Him the honor of His sovereignty by submitting to Him. They never gave Him the honor of His holiness and mercy by loving Him. They never gave Him the honor of His efficiency and faithfulness by trusting in Him, but have looked upon God as one not fit to be believed or trusted, and have treated Him as if He were a liar. 1 John 5:10, He that believeth not God hath made Him a liar. They never so much as heartily thank God for one mercy they have received in their whole lives, though God has always maintained them and they have always lived upon His bounty. They never so much as once heartily thank Christ for coming into the world and dying to give them an opportunity to be saved. They never would show Him so much gratitude as to receive Him when He has knocked at their door, but have always shut the door against Him, though He has come to knock at their door upon no other ground but only to offer Himself to be their Savior. They never so much as had any true desires after God or Christ in their whole lives. When God has offered Himself to them to be their portion and Christ to be the friend of their souls, they did not desire it. They never desired to have God and Christ for their portion. They had rather be without them than with them, if they could avoid going to hell without them. They never had so much as an honorable thought of God. They always have esteemed earthly things before Him. And notwithstanding all they have heard in the commands of God and Christ, they have always preferred a little worldly profit or sinful pleasure before them. Number 3. Unconverted men are in a dreadful condition by reason of the dreadful wickedness which there is in them. 1. Sin is a thing of a dreadful nature, and that because it is against an infinitely great and infinitely holy God. There is in the nature of man enmity against God, contempt of God, rebellion against God. Sin rises up as an enemy against the Most High. It is a dreadful thing for a creature to be an enemy to the Creator, or to have any such thing in his heart as enmity against Him, as will be very clear if we consider the difference between God and the creature, and how all creatures compared with Him are as small dust of the balance, are as nothing, less than nothing, and vanity. There is an infinite evil in sin. If we saw the hundredth part of the evil there is in sin, it would make us sensible that those who have any sin, let it be ever so small, are in a dreadful condition. Number 2. The hearts of natural men are exceedingly full of sin. If they had but one sin in their hearts, it would be sufficient to render their condition very dreadful. But they have not only one sin, but all manner of sin. There is every kind of lust. The heart is a mere sink of sin, a fountain of corruption, whence issue all manner of filthy streams. Mark 7:21-22. From within, out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. There is no one lust in the heart of the devil that is not in the heart of man. Natural men are in the image of the devil. The image of God is raced out, and the image of the devil is stamped upon them. God is graciously pleased to restrain the wickedness of men, principally by fear in respect to their credit and reputation, and by education. And if it were not for such restraints as these, there is no kind of wickedness that men would not commit whenever it came in their way. The commission of those things, at the mention of which men are now ready to start and seem to be shot when they hear them read, will be common in general, and earth would be a kind of hell. What would not natural men do if they were not afraid? Matthew 5:17. But beware of men. Men have not only every kind of lust and wicked and perverse dispositions in their hearts, but they have them to a dreadful degree. There is not only pride, but an amazing degree of it. Pride, whereby a man is disposed to set himself even above the throne of God itself. The hearts of natural men are mere sinks of sensuality. Man has become like a beast in placing his happiness in sensual enjoyments. The heart is full of the most loathsome lusts. The soul of natural men are more vile and abominable than any reptile. If God should open a window in the heart, so that we might look into it, it would be the most loathsome spectacle that ever was set before our eyes. There is not only malice in the hearts of natural men, but a fountain of it. Men naturally, therefore, deserve the language applied to them by Christ, Matthew 3:7. O generation of vipers! In Matthew 23:33, ye serpents, ye generation of vipers! Men, if it were not for fear and other such restraints, would not only commit all manner of sin, but to what degree, to what length would they not proceed? What has a natural man to keep him from openly blaspheming God as much as any of the devils, yea, from dethroning him, if that were possible, and fear and other such restraints were out of the way? Yea, would it not be thus with many of those who now appear with a fair face and will speak most of God and make many pretenses of worshipping and serving him? The exceeding wickedness of natural men appears abundantly in the sins they commit, notwithstanding all these restraints. Every natural man, if he reflects, may see enough to show him how exceedingly sinful he is. Sin flows from the heart as constantly as water flows from a fountain, Jeremiah 6:7. As a fountain casteth out her water, so she casteth out her wickedness. And this wickedness that so abounds in their hearts has dominion over them. They are slaves to it, Romans 7:14, sold under sin. They are so under the power of sin that they are driven on by their lusts and of course against their own conscience and against their own interest. They are hurried on to their own ruin, and that at the same time their reason tells them it will probably be their ruin. 2 Peter 2:14, cannot cease from sin. On account of wicked men's being so under the power of sin, the heart of man is said to be desperately wicked. Jeremiah 17:9 and Ephesians 2:1, dead in trespasses and sins. 3, the hearts of natural men are dreadfully hard and incorrigible. There is nothing but the mighty power of God will move them. They will cleave to sin and go on in sin, let what will be done with them. Proverbs 27:22. Though thou shouldest spray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. There is nothing that will awe our hearts, and there is nothing that will draw them to obedience. Let there be mercies or afflictions, threatenings or gracious calls and invitations, frowning or patience and long-suffering or fatherly counsels and exhortations. Isaiah 26:10. Let favor be showed to the wicked, yet will he not learn righteousness. In the land of uprightness will he deal unjustly and will not behold the majesty of the Lord. Secondly, the relative state of those who are in an unconverted condition is dreadful. This will appear if we consider, 1, their relative state with respect to God, and that because they are without God in the world. They have no interest or part in God. He is not their God. He hath declared he will not be their God. Hosea 1:9. God and believers have a mutual covenant relation and right to each other. They are his people and he is their God, but he is not the covenant God of those who are in an unconverted state. There is a great alienation and estrangement between God and the wicked. He is not their father and portion. They have nothing to challenge of God. They have no right to any one of his attributes. The believer can challenge aright in the power of God and his wisdom and holiness, his grace and love. All are made over to him to be for his benefit. But the unconverted can claim no right in any of God's perfections. They have no God to protect and defend them in this evil world, to defend them from sin or from Satan or any evil. They have no God to guide and direct them in any doubts or difficulties, to comfort and support their minds under afflictions. They are without God in all their affairs, and all the business they undertake, in their family affairs and in their personal affairs, in their outward concerns and in the concerns of their souls. How can a creature be more miserable than to be separated from the Creator and have no God whom he can call his own God? He is wretched indeed who goes up and down in the world without a God to take care of him, to be his guide and protector, and to bless him in his affairs. The very light of nature teaches that a man's God is his all. Judges 18:24. Ye have taken away my gods, and what have I more? There is but one God, and in him they have no right. They are without that God whose will must determine their whole well-being, both here and forever. That unconverted men are without God shows that they are liable to all manner of evil. They are liable to the power of the devil, to the power of all manner of temptation, for they are without God to protect them. They are liable to be deceived and seduced into erroneous opinions, and to embrace damnable doctrines. It is not possible to deceive the saints in this way, but the unconverted may be deceived. They are become papists, or heathens, or atheists. They have nothing to secure them from it. They are liable to be given up of God to judicial hardness of heart. They deserve it, and since God is not their God, they have no certainty that God will not inflict this awful judgment upon them. As they are without God in the world, they are liable to commit all manner of sin, and even the unpardonable sin itself. They cannot be sure they shall not commit that sin. They are liable to build up a false hope of heaven, and so to go hoping to hell. They are liable to die senseless and stupid, as many have died. They are liable to die in such a case as Saul and Judas did, fearless of hell. They have no security from it. They are liable to all manner of mischief, since they are without God. They cannot tell what shall befall them, nor when they are secure from anything. They are not safe one moment. 10,000 fatal mischiefs may befall them, that may make them miserable forever. They who have God for their God are safe from all such evils. It is not possible that they should befall them. God is their covenant God, and they have His faithful promise to be their refuge. But what mischief is there which may not befall natural men? Whatever hopes they may have may be disappointed. Whatever fair prospect there may seem to be of their conversion and salvation, it may vanish away. They may make great progress towards the kingdom of God and yet come short at last. They may seem to be in a very hopeful way to be converted and yet never be converted. A natural man is sure of nothing. He is sure of no good, nor is he sure of escaping any evil. It is therefore a dreadful condition that a natural man is in. They who are in a natural state are lost. They have wandered from God, and they are like lost sheep. They have wandered from their shepherd. They are poor, helpless creatures in a howling wilderness, and have no shepherd to protect or to guide them. They are desolate and exposed to innumerable fatal mischiefs. Number two, they are not only without God, but the wrath of God abides upon them. John 3:36, He that believeth not the Son of God shall not see life, but the wrath of God abideth upon him. There is no peace between God and them, but God is angry with them every day. He is not only angry with them, but that to a dreadful degree. There is a fire kindled in God's anger. It burns like fire. Wrath abides upon them, which, if it should be executed, would plunge them into the lowest hell and make them miserable there to all eternity. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel to anger. God has been angry with them ever since they began to sin. He has been provoked by them every day, ever since they exercised any reason. And He is provoked by them more and more every hour. The flame of His wrath is continually burning. There are many now in hell that never provoke God more than they, nor so much as many of them. Wherever they go about with a dreadful wrath of God abiding on them. They eat and drink and sleep under wrath. How dreadful a condition, therefore, are they in. It is the most awful thing for the creature to have the wrath of his Creator abiding on him. The wrath of God is a thing infinitely dreadful. The wrath of a king is as the roaring of a lion. But what is the wrath of a king who is but a worm of the dust? to the wrath of the infinitely great and dreadful God. How dreadful is it to be under the wrath of the first being, the being of beings, the great creator and mighty possessor of heaven and earth? How dreadful is it for a person to go about under the wrath of God who gave him being, and in whom he lives and moves, who is everywhere present, and without whom he cannot move a step nor draw a breath. Natural men, inasmuch as they are under wrath, are under a curse. God's wrath and curse are continually upon them. They can have no reasonable comfort, therefore, in any of their enjoyments, for they do not know but that they are given them in wrath, and shall be curses to them and not blessings. As it is said in Job 18:15, brimstone shall be scattered upon his habitation. How can they take any comfort in their food or in their possessions when they do not know but all are given them to fit them for the slaughter? Head 2. Their relative state will appear dreadful if we consider how they stand related to the devil. Number 1. They who are in a natural state are the children of the devil. As the saints are the children of God, so the ungodly are the children of the devil. 1 John 3:10. In this, the children of God are manifest in the children of the devil. Matthew 13:38-39. The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom. But the tares are the children of the wicked one. The enemy that sowed them is the devil. John 8:44, ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. They are, as it were, begotten of the devil. They proceed from him. 1 John 3:8. He that committeth sin is of the devil. As Adam begat a son in his own likeness, so are wicked men in the likeness and image of the devil. They acknowledge this relation and own themselves children of the devil by consenting that he should be their father. They subject themselves to him, hearken to his counsels as children hearken to the counsels of a father. They learn of him to imitate him, and do as he does as children learn to imitate their parents. John 8:38. I speak that which I have seen with my father, and you do that which ye have seen with your father. How awful the state is this! How dreadful is it to be a child of the devil, the spirit of darkness, the prince of hell, that wicked, malignant, and cruel spirit! To have anything to do with him is very dreadful. It would be accounted a dreadful, frightful thing only to meet the devil, to have him appear to a person in a visible shape. How dreadful then must it be to be his child? How dreadful for any person to have the devil for his father? Number 2. They are the devil's captives and servants. Man before his fall was in a state of liberty, but now he has fallen into Satan's hands. The devil has got the victory and carried him captive. Natural men are in Satan's possession, and they are under his dominion. They are brought by him into subjection to his will, to go at his bidding and to do what he commands. 2 Timothy 2:26, taken captive by him at his will. The devil rules over ungodly men. They are all his slaves and do his drudging. This argues their state to be dreadful. Men accounted an unhappy state of life to be slaves, and especially to be slaves to a bad master, to one who is very hard, unreasonable, and cruel. How miserable do we look upon those persons who are taken captive by the Turks or other such barbarous nations, and put by them to the meanest and most cruel slavery, and treated no better than they treat their cattle. But what is this, to be taken captive by the devil, the prince of hell, and made a slave to him? Had not a man better be a slave to anyone on earth than to the devil? The devil is, of all masters, the most cruel, and treats his servants the worst. He puts them to the vilest service, to that which is the most dishonorable of any in the world. No work is so dishonorable as a practice of sin. The devil puts his servants to such work as debases them below the dignity of human nature. They must take themselves like beasts to do that work, to serve their filthy lusts. And besides the meanness of the work, it is a very hard service. The devil causes them to serve him at the expense of the peace of their own conscience, and oftentimes at the expense of their reputation, at the expense of their estates, and shortening of their days. The devil is a cruel master, for the service upon which he puts his slaves is to undo themselves. He keeps them hard at work day and night to work their own ruin. He never intends to give them any reward for their pains, but their pains are to work out their own everlasting destruction. It is to gather fuel and kindle the fire for themselves to be tormented in to all eternity. Number 3. The soul of a natural man is a habitation of the devil. The devil is not only their father and rules over them, but he dwells in them. It is a dreadful thing for a man to have the devil near him, often coming to him. But it is a more dreadful thing to have him dwell with a man, to take up his constant abode with him, and more dreadful yet to have him dwell in him, to take up his abode in his heart. But thus it is with every natural man. He takes up his abode in his heart. As the soul of a godly man is a habitation of the Spirit of God, so is the soul of a wicked man the habitation of unclean spirits. As the soul of a godly man is a temple of God, so the soul of a wicked man is the synagogue of Satan. A wicked man's soul is in Scripture called Satan's house and Satan's palace. Matthew 12:27. How can one enter into a strong man's house, meaning the devil? In Luke 11:21. When a strong man armed keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. Satan not only lives, but reigns in the heart of a wicked man. He has not only taken up his abode there, but he has set up his throne there. The heart of a wicked man is a place of the devil's rendezvous. The doors of a wicked man's heart are open to devils. They have free access there, though they are shut against God and Jesus Christ. There are many devils, no doubt, that have to do with one wicked man, and his heart is a place where they meet. The soul of a wicked man is, as it was said of Babylon, the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Thus dreadful is the condition of a natural man by reason of the relation in which he stands to the devil. Number 2. The state of unconverted men is very dreadful if we consider its relation to the future world. Our state here is not lasting, but transitory. We are pilgrims and strangers here, and are principally designed for a future world. We continue in this present state but a short time, but we are to be in that future state to all eternity. And therefore men are to be denominated either happy or miserable, chiefly with regard to that future state. It matters but little comparatively what our state is here, because it will continue but a short time. It is nothing to eternity. But that man is a happy man who is entitled to happiness, and he is miserable who is in danger of misery in his eternal state. Prosperity or adversity in the present state alters them but very little, because this state is of so short continuance. Number 1. Those who are in a natural condition have no title to any inheritance in another world. There are glorious things in another world. There are unsearchable riches and unspeakable and inconceivable abundance, but they have nothing to do with it. Heaven is a world of glory and blessedness, but they have no right to the least portion of those blessings. If they should die and go out of the world as they are, they would go destitute, having no inheritance, no friend, no enjoyments to go to. They will have no God to whom they may go, no Redeemer to receive their departing souls, no angel to be a ministering spirit to them, to take care of them, to guard or defend them, no interest in that Redeemer who has purchased those blessings. What is said of the Ephesians is true of those who are in a natural condition. At that time, you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenant of promise, having no hope, and without God in the world. What a dreadful case they are in, who live in the world having no hope, without any title to any benefits hereafter, and without any ground to hope for any good in their future and eternal state. Number two. Natural men are in a dreadful condition because of the misery in which they are exposed in the future world. This will be obvious if we consider, 1, how great the misery is of which they are in danger. Number 2, how great is their danger of this misery. Number 1, how great the misery is of which they are in danger. It is great in two respects. 1, the torment and misery are great in themselves, and number 2, they are of endless duration. 1. The torment and misery of which natural men are in danger are exceedingly great in themselves. They are great beyond any of our words or thoughts. When we speak of them, our words are swallowed up. We say they are great and exceedingly great and very dreadful. But when we have used all the words we can to express them, how faint is the idea that is raised in our minds in comparison with the reality. This misery will appear very dreadful if we consider what calamities meet together in it. In it the wicked are deprived of all goods, separated from God and all fruits of His mercy. In this world they enjoy many of the streams of God's goodness, but in the future world they will have no more smiles of God, no more manifestations of His mercy by benefits, by warnings, by calls and invitations. He will never more manifest His mercy by the exercise of patience and long-suffering, by waiting to be gracious. No more use any forbearance with them for their good. No more exercise His mercy by strivings of the Spirit, by sending messengers and using means. They will have no more testimonies of the fruits of God's goodness in enjoying food and raiment, and comfortable dwellings and convenient accommodations, nor any of the comforts of this life, no more manifestations of His mercy by suffering them to draw near to Him with their prayers, to pray for what they need. God will exercise no pity towards them, no regard for their welfare. Cut off from all the comforts of this life, shut out of heaven, they will see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But they shall be turned away from God and from all good into the blackness of darkness, into the pit of hell, into that great receptacle which God has provided on purpose to cast into it the filthy and polluted and abominable of the universe.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's EDMONTON, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship, in which they absurdly exercise themselves, would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."